Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Before you head out to the ski hills and the skating rinks to enjoy some of those winter sports, you probably should make sure to take a few precautions to avoid injuries. And my guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, can help you out with that. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, thanks for joining us again.
Good to be here.
And Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. And Jill, great to see you again, too.
It's great to be here.
Well, we have lots of things we can talk about, and certainly they're always ready to answer your physical therapy questions. They've got great advice for easing into winter sports. So call in 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Lots of holidays of all sorts coming
right,
up here.
Exactly, lots of them. And lots of snow.
And it's easy to overeat and under-exercise.
Right.
I got to admit, you know, this last week, I got out three times for my morning.
Oh, yeah. It's
walk
jog,
run.
It's been snowing in the morning.
Well, it's cold.
So it's tough,
and it's dark.
Cold.
And then you can't see the black ice, and it's slippery, right. And so there
exactly.
there are definitely barriers to exercising this time of year.
Yeah, or even as I stepped outside to put the dog out in my bedroom slippers, which was a bad idea because they're very slick, and when it's dark or dusty, you can't see that patch of ice or snow, so...
Right.
That stuff will take you down. So, yes, get out.
But how do we, you know, what do we do to keep active in the next few weeks?
Well, so a lot of times it requires you to change up your routine a little bit. So you're a morning exerciser, Larry.
Yep.
And so now it's dark in the morning. It's cold in the morning. So now you may have to change, alter your lifestyle a little bit and find some time during the day when we have that precious daylight to do your exercise. So for you, it might be you might have to do a walk on campus in the middle of the day when the sun is out and the sidewalks are clear so you can see.
Right. Or you could do like my teenager who would usually go out and sprint some hills, who ran up and down the stairs until really we wanted to kill him. But but he ran up and down the stairs many times. So
right. So you have to find ways to modify it. And then with the busyness of holidays and shopping and things like that, simple things like when you're shopping, for example, take the steps. Don't take the escalator.
Yep.
You know, do lots of walking while you're in the mall. It's okay if you're zigzagging back and forth across the mall. That exercise is good for you.
Right. Right. Exactly. And when you're and if you're home doing things with your family, if you're watching that favorite Christmas show, every commercial, get up and do something. Not walk to the refrigerator, but do something else. Whether you get up and down from your chair 10 times or get down on the floor and plank for a commercial.
We played Rummikub last night, and we make our girls do push-ups in between.
Yeah.
So they were doing push-ups.
Yeah, the twins do that. They have a contest to see who can do the most, or sit-ups or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, do it in between turns. It's a great, or you could even have a little, the fun thing would be if you're playing a dice game to assign an exercise, and when you roll the dice, you have to do that many repetitions of whatever.
There you go.
Yeah, that would be a fun
combining
little game.
Combining Yahtzee with exercise.
Yahtzee and exercise.
Yaxercise.
Yeah.
I'm actually, you know, I do not have weights. And I was thinking of just having some weights that I would have for when I watch TV.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's a great idea.
Yep.
Some leg weights and some hand weights.
Absolutely.
Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm. That's what her son asked for Christmas.
That's
from
right.
Me.
Yes.
Is that
Wait.
Right?
That's what he's getting.
Oh, I hope he's not listening. He better not be. He should be in school.
Exactly.
Nobody tell him if they hear.
How do you, one of the things that, you know, you just get started skating. I did a little skating not just recently here and in a rink. But you get some sore muscles if, of course, like me, I just, you know, you just jump on the skates and go out there without doing anything.
Well, and if you think about walking or jogging, you're really moving in the sagittal plane. And so you're using those muscles literally to walk forward. When you skate, you think about how much your legs come out side to side. And so you may have a really good cardiovascular base, but how you're using your muscles is entirely different. And so people are bound to get a little bit of muscle soreness if they don't kind of ease into the activity.
And that happens at all ages. Mm-hmm. My twins, who are active soccer players and cross-country runners went back to their, they call it their lift training, where they do a lot of core and they do more speed work and some weights. And the next day they couldn't figure out why they were sore. I'm like, well,
right.
Guess what, guys? You know, just because you're young doesn't mean you get a pass on muscle soreness from a new activity.
Right.
Anytime you do something new, use your muscles in a different way, even if it's the same muscle group. For example, as Jill said, sagittal plane, front and back, biking, it's very different from running, very different from skating. So just work your way into it.
Yeah, and what about, well, let's say we didn't, and we've got these sore muscles. Is there much of anything to do but just time?
And move.
Yeah, exactly. Move? Yeah, so sitting and just kind of immobilizing yourself is actually the worst thing you can do. The more you can move and stretch and not sit for a prolonged period of time kind of creates more of what I call a muscle flush and kind of flushes the soreness out. So we encourage you to move. And actually the best thing for muscle soreness is actually another bout of exercise.
Yeah.
There you go.
So get back up on that horse.
I actually, it's for me in the morning, if I'm a little achy from one thing or another, I just that jog in the morning, I come back from that, and now I'm feeling good.
Exactly. That's fantastic. Yep. Yeah. Well, that's because joints are designed to move. So particularly in the morning for those people with sore and stiff muscles or joints in the morning, it's because they need to move. They don't like being immobile all night.
Carla in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Carla.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
So I have the opposite problem. I'm a really pretty active, almost 50-year-old woman. I am constant. I'm a mother, right?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
That's the problem in itself. Like right now I'm making chili for dinner, right? Because I can't just sit down. But I have I said to my husband this morning, honey, I'm a broken record. My back is really out. I can't carry the laundry up four stories and all that kind of stuff. And he's just like rolls his eyeballs and says, okay. But my back is just like, it's like a constant lower pain. And I am fit. I do core exercises. I work out. I swim. I do yoga. I walk. You know, it's not a matter of fitness anymore, but now it's just pain. And it's in my lower back, kind of where the belt buckle sits.
Yep.
And I don't know if it should be heat, if I should go in and have it looked at. Uh-huh. I'm really trying to avoid intervention.
Yep.
I'm trying to do everything I can to, you know, keep myself healthy. But this is bad, and I'm really scared about walking my dog in the mornings. I have to have my yak tracks on, and I can't skate yet because I think I'm terrified of wiping out and just losing that control.
Well, it's great that you've done all these things to try to self-manage this, but something is amiss. So for as strong as you are in your core and so on, you need to go in and see someone. It doesn't mean you have to have an intervention, but getting to the underlying cause of this and someone that's so fit, what we see frequently is people who are doing a lot of exercise, but they're not doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. So it's not do you do core strengthening or do you not do core strengthening, but how do you do your core strengthening and what muscles are you activating and are you in the right position and posture?
Right.
Then the other sort of sidebar to that is we see this kind of cluster of symptoms or complaints in people who are hypermobile.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have hypermobility, your core exercises need to be tweaked in a way that works for your mobility.
Right. Okay.
So seeing somebody, seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits where someone can do an assessment and say, look, they can look at how you're doing your exercises, look at your back, do an exam and figure out why you're having pain.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That makes good sense. Mm-hmm. Or a little ibuprofen and some heat, which is what my doctor told me once when I had.
Well, keeping moving, like Carla is a great idea. There might be positions or directions that a physical therapist could cue you kind of to avoid or stay out of if that's the aggravating factor. So we're not going to tell you to stop yoga, but it may be, avoid this pose and encourage this pose to kind of, if you need a directional preference, if there's a direction.
I've done all those great spinal, the classes that the health plans offer.
Yes.
So I'm pretty aware of the the proper positioning. So right. I don't want to go in, but I think I have to.
Well, I think you should, and I don't think you should be afraid to go in. And I think those classes are great, but realize that back pain is not back pain is not back pain. And so for people who say, well, so-and-so had back surgery and they're better, or so-and-so had back surgery and they're not better, you can't apply that. The back is a very complex area. There's a lot of factors that come into play, upper back, mobility, pelvis, even all the way down to your feet, that affect how the back functions. And so, you know, while the classes are good for teaching you some fundamentals, there may be still some specifics that you need for your back.
So good luck, and thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Yeah, to you as well. Thank you. You can join in, too, by the way. We've got open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Catherine emailed to say she's been out snowshoeing, cross-country skiing, and swimming, the latter indoors, of course.
Very good.
In the past week. Yesterday, she was stretching and suddenly felt a sharp, painful pulling or snapping feeling in her upper thigh. Now when she walks, if she takes a long stride, she can feel it. How can I heal this quickly? I want to get back out skiing and snowshoeing as soon as possible.
Well, if she's having that pain when she's striding, I'm assuming it's her back leg and she maybe kind of strained her quadriceps a little bit. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah,
on the front
that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Quadriceps are hip flexors. Snowshoeing is a lot of hip flexor,
right.
So it could be rectus femoris.
Right.
So, yeah, so getting back to activity, if it is a muscle pull, what we typically recommend is stretching, some gentle stretching. It's been 24 hours, so I'd go ahead and stretch it. You could use some heat. I would walk with a shortened stride for a little bit as it recovers, and then I would just gradually work my way back into activity.
Right, and starting with swimming is probably a great idea because it's non-weight-bearing.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that. You could certainly do it with pull buoys between her knees, so if her legs were sore, she could still get a good aerobic workout while letting that rest a little bit.
Yeah, it may have just been too much new activity for her quadriceps in a short period of time.
All right. Yeah. So more time in the pool for a little while.
Well, maybe just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, or you know, getting out skiing and snowshoeing, but for a shorter distance, a slower pace.
All right. Mary in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering about the treatment for tendonitis. It's kind of around my shoulder to my elbow, and I've heard from people that heat and icing is good, and I was wondering how long do you have to do that every day?
So it sounds like if it's kind of, is it in the front of your arm, Mary?
It's kind of like, it's not beneath the arm, it's kind of like, you know, the other side.
So on the outside, the top of your shoulder and down the outside of your arm?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So it's probably some rotator cuff tendonitis, and that has a tendency to refer down your arm. So with rotator cuff, with any kind of tendonitis, if it's truly inflamed, then using anti-inflammatory strategies such as icing or anti-inflammatory meds such as ibuprofen is a good strategy. However, many times what we see is actually rotator cuff tendinopathy, where the tendon itself becomes a little fibrotic and there's actually not any inflammation with it. Can I ask how old you are, Mary?
I'm 71.
Okay. So chances are you probably have a little bit of fibrotic changes and your tendons itself are a little frayed. With normal aging, that happens. So you probably do really well with some heat and mobility exercises to get your arm moving better.
So how did you decide that you had tendonitis? Did you see somebody who made a diagnosis?
I went to a doctor, and she told me to use Icy Hot. And then if it was still bothering me, to come and see her, but I haven't gone back.
All right. Well, this kind of problem responds really well to some physical therapy exercises. So, you know, if the Icy Hot makes it feel better, that's fine. Icy Hot itself doesn't have any real therapeutic value. It warms it so it makes it feel better. So it works for pain control. It doesn't really affect the tendonitis at all.
Uh-huh.
So I would say in this weather, whatever feels better for you, heat or ice for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes is fine. But really what helps this to get better is some exercise. And there's some very specific exercises that a physical therapist could give you that you can do at home to help you recover from this and prevent it from coming back again.
What would be the nature of those kinds of exercises?
Well, there's a lot of times it's working on posture, because if the humeral head or the ball in the ball and socket joint is not sitting in a good position, that can cause some rotator cuff pathology. So it might be working on getting scapula, your shoulder blades down and back in a better position.
So squeezing your shoulder blades together and back when you're standing and sitting.
Okay.
And then there are some very specific exercises for the rotator cuff. The job of the rotator cuff is actually kind of to steer the ball in the socket joint. Doesn't have to do a lot of lifting, but every time you move your arm, it has to make sure that the ball is seated appropriately in the socket. I call them the four women of the shoulder because they are in control.
God.
And sometimes those four women are in a car and they get off the road, and that's what has happened with Mary. So,
oh, very nice.
So
okay.
We need to do, there's some very specific exercises you can do with bands or weights, very light load.
Yeah, and even just raising your arm with your thumb up out at a 45-degree angle, like you're going to reach out and hug someone with your thumb up, just doing that arm raising is a good rotator cuff exercise as long as it doesn't hurt.
Hmm. There we go.
So,
all right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with my guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at avoiding injuries, and if you've got one, what to do about it, with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Larry Mueller here. Boy, we've got open lines. Go call us at 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. Susan posted on Facebook that she would like to use her 5-pound weights, but she gets bored. Mm-hmm. Is it useless to do 10 repetitions once and then stop?
Well, it's not useless, but if you're doing 10 repetitions with 5 pounds and your muscles are not fatigued, then the dosage is too little to get stronger. It will maintain where you're at, but you're not going to get any stronger.
Right. So really, she should be doing exercises more to the point of fatigue, or where she loses form with her weight. So it kind of depends on what she's doing. If she's doing a lower extremity exercise, for example, a squat, and holding that 5-pound weight, that's not going to probably be nearly enough load.
Right. But if she's doing arm raises, you know, she'll probably feel it after a while. I usually tell people, if you can do an exercise and you can get to 30 repetitions and you're still fine, then you don't have enough weight.
Yeah.
So 10 repetitions, if she's feeling fatigue in the muscle, like she really can't do anymore, you really go to fatigue, mm-hmm. as Jill said.
Can you do it while you're watching TV and then do it every commercial?
You could. I would probably
Between commercials?
I would probably do a circuit and kind of rotate through 3 or 4 exercises throughout the commercials, mm-hmm. just to kind of give you a little bit of recovery time. That's probably what I would do. I would do 3 or 4 upper extremity exercises, and I'd go through the circuit twice or something like that.
But again, you should be getting fatigued, or you don't have enough weight.
Yeah. She could probably stand more load. Her body's probably accommodated to it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Joe in Green Bay up next. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
What can we do for you today?
Well, as we speak, I'm trying to walk off a Charlie horse in my right calf, and I've been getting it pretty regular. Boy, if I try stretching, all of a sudden it can flare up on me, and you do the, you know, try everything to try and make it go away, but I don't know what's the situation, mm-hmm. you know, why it'd be cramping up that bad.
Does it cramp at night?
I'll tell you, at night, if I, like, lay in bed, if I stretch, all of a sudden it'll fire off on me, and you got to jump up and try and hop around and try and find a position where it's not going to hurt.
Yeah.
Have you had any change in the frequency with which this is happening? So, in other words, is it getting worse lately, and can you correlate it with anything?
It's it seems to be getting worse. You know, like a little while ago here, I was sitting down, and all of a sudden it just started to, you know, to spasm on me, and I had to stand up and hurry up and move in a hurry to try and, you know, find a position where it went away.
Have you spoken to your doctor about this?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, that would be my next step. Sounds like claudication.
Mm-hmm.
So
what
could,
is that?
It could be a narrowing of the blood vessels that provide circulation to your legs. It could be coming from some narrowing in his back, some claudication in his back. It could be coming from the blood vessels that go to his legs where he has narrowing there, where he's not getting sufficient circulation.
Do you notice any swelling in that leg? Does that leg or that calf look more swollen or bigger than the other side?
No, I haven't really paid too much attention to that. I do have the first vertebrae off my tailbone is disintegrating, and I've been
doctoring. There you go.
That.
S1.
Yeah, so that's the nerve root, interestingly, that goes down to your calf.
To your calves,
so that's
yeah.
exactly probably okay. what's
yeah.
going on.
Yeah, so... So I would make sure that whoever you're doctoring with for that lower lumbar vertebrae knows about the increasing frequency of the cramps in your calves.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's an important symptom that we would use to monitor the well-being of your low back.
Okay. I know a few years ago, you know, I went to the surgeon, you know, to say I was ready for surgery, and they said, "Well, are you having any sciatic issues?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, I'm not going to do anything because it's not going to make a difference on your back pain."
Yeah.
This is an important symptom to let him know about.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Joe. Mike in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hey. So I was carrying a box out to the truck and slipped on the ice, and I took my full weight onto my left side, kind of ribs.
Oh.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Did you drop the box? Did you drop the box?
I saved the box.
Nice.
Well,
most important.
I wish I hadn't. But.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really hurt to push on it, but, you know, any kind of twisting, lifting my left arm, deep breath, when I lay on my side, I can feel it's like a pop sometimes, and like if I'm rolling on my side. And I'm wondering, I don't think I broke ribs. It feels like the ribs, muscle, tendons, ligaments, everything, like, separated from each other.
How long ago did this happen?
Thursday.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and when you feel that popping, where about along your rib is the popping?
Center.
Oh,
on my side.
On your side.
So it's right under your arm?
It's way over on your side. And is it very low? Is it really low, like your lowest rib or farther up?
Right in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it could be that you strain some of those muscles. There's a bunch of little muscles that run in between your ribs. You also have your serratus.
Right.
So if you're moving your arm, your serratus controls like your scapular position as you raise and lower your arm. So you could have strained some of those muscles
right.
when you landed
then,
on it.
Right.
You know, when you think of popping, you think of things that sublux. So, you know, it's possible that the rib head subluxed or you have a little bit of instability there, but that's a little less likely, and you wouldn't treat it any differently.
Right.
So, you know, at this point, I would work on simply stretching a little bit, gently using your arm and things like that to let it recover.
Right. And, you know, if you don't have any issues taking anti-inflammatories or anything like that, you could certainly try to see if some over-the-counter anti-inflamms kind of knock down the symptoms
right.
a little bit.
If it was broken, it would hurt to touch right along the rib.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt like that.
Yeah, okay. And even if it did, they wouldn't do anything about
right,
it.
Exactly.
So they would treat it the same way. They'd
right.
treat it conservatively, try to use your arm, try to move your trunk, try to get those muscles loosened up and strong again. And, you know, if in 10 to 14 days you're still not turning the corner, then go in and have someone take a look at it. But you should recover from
right,
this.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Good
yeah.
luck.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
good
Mike.
Luck.
Linda in Milwaukee, hello to you.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's have you got some pains to talk about?
I do. I have a pain in my right hip, and it seems to be progressively getting worse. Now, I did have two falls this year.
Okay.
One, like the previous caller, I fell, but there was a little bitty brick wall that I kind of fell on, and it did take my full weight. And that, I didn't think it was bad, though, because I didn't really hurt that much. I went on to tennis classes that morning, but later it started to hurt, and it bothered me for a while. But after a few weeks, it got less and less and less, and it went away. And then about 3 weeks ago, I fell down the stairs.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
Yes. My key was on the stairs, and it was dark. And so, yeah, I fell down the stairs. But I've got this strange pain on my right hip. It starts in the hip, and then it's like a tingly pain that goes all the way down the leg into the foot.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel it, except at first I would feel it when I sat for a while, like I'm driving a kind of a distance.
Yep.
And then when I get out, it would just be tingly. Now it's turned into pain.
Okay. Linda, that's your back, Linda? That's probably your back, not your hip. So it sounds like a fairly classic sciatica pattern.
Right.
It tends to be worse after you've been sitting, especially sitting in a car, just because of the position of car seats and the vibration of the road tends to annoy it. Primary hip problems don't usually cause tingling, and they may cause localized pain, but not pain down to your ankle. And since you're getting worse, I would go in and see your doctor or see a physical therapist about this and have them look at your back.
Yeah. Okay. And it sounds like you're active if you play tennis.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that you keep active and stay active. And it sounds like the two falls you had were because you tripped over something. It wasn't a balance issue.
Right. Exactly. But you need to. The fact that this is getting worse means that some sort of intervention needs to be done. Someone needs to take a look at this and get you on the right exercise program, get you moving in the right direction so that you can recover from this. Because whatever you're doing is not helping you to get better.
No, it isn't. And it's getting worse.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you change how you move, and then other things start to hurt, and then you may fall again because you're not moving well. So I'd get in and get this looked at.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
Yeah. Well, let's see what's on Lisa's mind in Monona. Lisa, hello to you.
Hello. Many moons ago, I broke my elbow when I was a kid. Okay, and it's never really bothered me, and it doesn't open or close all the way. My job is really physical, and I got laid off, and it was about a month, and then I went and did another job, which is really physical, and about, I don't know, a couple days later, my hand started getting numb down, all the way down my arm to my pinky and, like, to the palm of my hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I looked it up. It said something like Alden's nerve.
Ulnar nerve. Yep.
Good job. Ulnar nerve. Yeah.
Well done.
When it first happened, I mean, I couldn't even grasp on anything small.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of power grip. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like a paralysis or something.
Yes.
Right.
And, but now it's gotten way better and it's almost gone, except for there's still a little bit of tingling on the palm side of my pinky.
Yep.
And is that going to go away or?
You've done a marvelous job.
So yes, that is so that's your ulnar nerve, and it's when you hit your funny bone at your elbow, that's the nerve that we talk about when you hit your funny bone. And if you have decreased motion at your elbow from an injury you sustained as a child and you're doing a physical job, you may have changed your mechanics and how you use your shoulder, elbow, wrist, and hand. You can actually stretch or irritate that ulnar nerve and get something actually called ulnar neuritis. So I'm guessing that's probably what happened. Even though you were doing a physical job and you went to a different physical job, you probably changed the mechanics of how you moved. So you probably had a little bit of ulnar neuritis. It sounds like it cleared up. It should eventually go away if your body kind of has accommodated to the new movements or activities and the inflammation is gone.
I'm really physical. I just keep going. I just kept using it, and hoping that the numbness would go away. And eventually, now I can grab things, and it's just the pinky, kind of.
Right.
Yep.
That's
you're on the right track.
Yep. You've done a nice job.
Okay. So, well, I'm just going to keep on going then.
Keep on going.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And let's see what's on Jeff's mind in Greendale. Hi, Jeff. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. I pulled a muscle in my upper back, right side above the shoulder blade. It's a slight pull. I have a physical job. But I've noticed that the pain will run along the top to that bone, that little bone that juts out.
Your scapula, right, your shoulder blade?
On your shoulder blade?
Shoulder blade?
No, the bone that's right at the base of the neck, kind of the little bone.
Okay. Like a T12 or a T12.
Yeah. A T1. Oh, my God. Let's review your anatomy.
Oh.
How
about a C8?
A C8. T1.
Kidding.
Yeah.
T1. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of knot right in the middle of your back. Yes.
That knot right at the top. And it's when I touch it, it's a little tender. And, you know, it doesn't prevent me from working. But I was just wondering if there's any stretching or if there's a heat or cold or something to put on that. It's never happened before. I mean, I pulled muscles, but not where that little ball at the base
that
of the neck
knob is
tender. Yeah.
Well, right where that knob is, that's probably, as Larry pointed out, T1, or the top level of your thoracic spine. And right where your cervical spine and your thoracic spine come together, it's called your cervical thoracic junction. A lot of people are very, very stiff there, and they end up with kind of increased motion above and kind of overusing the muscles in that area. So chances are you probably, my guess is he's irritated his levator scapula and some of the other muscles on that side.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel a stretch if you bring your chin down and look down and then look over towards your left armpit?
Yeah, I feel it on that bone.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So there's some muscles there that stretch, that attach there that you're stretching. So I would do some easy, gentle stretching. That will definitely help it. You know, sometimes just the spinous processes of our bones like that, especially kind of those ones that protrude, sometimes they're just a little bit tender in nature.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah, so you should get over this.
I don't want to self-diagnose too much, but you're always worried, like, what's wrong? You know,
Exactly. So, and just make sure if you're in a physical job, you know, what tends to happen is people are in those jobs and they think, well, geez, I exercise all day long. I don't need, and I have no energy left to do any exercise at the end of the day.
Right.
It, you know, whatever that job is, people tend to use the same muscles over and over. And so so you lose the balance between the muscles you're working and the ones that aren't being used. And so getting on a strengthening program to work some of those muscles, especially some of those little muscles around your neck and upper back, would be useful to make sure that you have balance strengthening all the way around, front to back and side to side.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's turn to Mike in Lake Mills next. Mike, hello.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm a retired physician, and 7 years ago, I had pain in my right hip, which I thought was trochanteric bursitis, but it didn't seem to fit, so I saw a physical therapist in Virginia, and she told me it was tensor fascia lata, gave me all the stuff to do, and amazingly enough for a physician, I followed her directions. <and got better. laughs> And now, the last year or so, it's kind of come back, worse at night. And my question for your panelists, I'm doing the stretching, but I also get these weird paresthesias down to below my knee. No weakness. I'm able to stand on my heels and toes. But does that make sense to you, that I would get paresthesias with a tensor fascia lata?
Well, there's a little superficial nerve there that has only sensory, no motor. It's your lateral femoral cutaneous nerve, and you can get something called moralgia paresthetica. It actually comes out over your iliac crest. You don't do anything where you wear, like, a belt that's cinched tight or a worker's belt or anything like that, do you?
All my belts are getting tighter. The other thing is, this goes down below my knee, and I didn't know if the moralgia paresthetica went down.
Oh, it usually
I don't think
doesn't.
It doesn't.
Yeah,
uh-uh.
You're right.
No.
Never mind. Okay.
And it's on the outside. You know, it sounds a little bit more like it's coming from your spine.
Right. And sometimes even greater trochanteric bursitis can be, that's a common referral place for myofascial low back pain. So I'm wondering if all of this might have had a low back origin at some point.
Right. Or at least low back in the mix.
Right.
Yeah, because the stretching is great. I'm doing it. It does help, but
it's kind of
weird, isn't it?
But the thing is, just because you're stretching the TFL doesn't mean the TFL is the origin of your pain. It may just be that as you're stretching that you're also gapping your lumbar spine.
Okay.
Okay.
I hear the wheels turning.
I do too.
Yeah.
Rusty, and there's a hamster on that wheel.
There's a hamster on that wheel.
Good for you. I love people who are compliant though.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. So it might be worth seeing a physical therapist. There's some great PTs out in Lake Mills. And seeing them and just have a back evaluation done and see what exercises you might need that are a little bit more specific to your back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call.
You bet. Thanks, Mike.
And, oh, my goodness, let's go to John in Port Wing now. John, hello.
Yes. You know, my insurance instructions told me I have a balance problem.
Okay.
And they say, go see ear doctor, you know. I went to ear doctor. He says, I got the same problem. Use a cane. How I improve my balance, you know? I have a balance problem.
Yeah.
Well, there are physical therapists who specialize in this. So,
yes.
So if it's from your ear, there are physical therapists who specialize in vestibular. That's part of your vestibular system, where your inner ear, where it affects your balance. So a physical therapist who specializes in this area would do a series of tests to see how much your vision contributes to your balance, how much your inner ear contributes to your balance issue, and how much your muscles and joints contribute to your balance issue, and then design a program for you that addresses whatever of those components are contributing to your balance problem.
Now, what specialist I should see?
It's called vestibular. So it's a vestibular physical therapist. It's
You know, do you think age has anything to do?
Well, it can happen a little bit more with aging, but there are still impairments that physical therapists who specialize in vestibular have to treat.
96.
Oh, good for you.
Oh. Where's Port Wing, Larry?
Where's Port Wing? Where's Port Wing, John? What are you close to?
What's on Lake Superior, you know, highway.
Yeah, I was trying to think of exactly.
Okay. Oh, what's the closest?
Ashland.
Oh, Ashland.
Ashland might be the closest.
Okay. All right. So where would you go for medical care, John?
Well, I used to go to Duluth, you know. There.
Okay. Oh, Duluth, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so.
That insurance canceled us. I go with Security Health in Wisconsin.
Okay, yeah, that should cover it. So, yeah, I would call like a hospital in that area and tell them what's going on and see if they can connect you with a physical therapist who can help you with that. Because, you know, you don't want to take a fall.
Right.
No. You know, you still got years left in you, I can tell by the sound of your voice. So
the spunkiness.
Exactly. So seeing a physical therapist who can examine those three systems, your visual, your ear, and your muscles, and design a program for you to improve your balance, is going to be time well spent.
So it's a vestibular.
Vestibular.
Physical therapist.
Yeah.
There we go. Good luck, John. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Call us back and let us know how that goes. Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear. And you guys are back January 16th?
Yes. Yep. Is that Martin Luther King Day?
It is.
It is,
all right.
Indeed. And we'll take some more calls. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. As we visit with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health's Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at the UW. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at sore aches and pains and sprains and strains today with Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Larry Mueller here. We have Karen in Wisconsin Dells who emailed to say she's recently been diagnosed with degenerative arthritis in her right hip. She has an appointment to see an orthopedic surgeon soon. There's literally no space between my femur head and my hip socket. She's thinking that the logical solution is hip replacement, which she's not thrilled about. Are there alternatives to hip replacement that PT could provide, or at best something to try before something as drastic as that surgery? Also, are hip replacement surgeries pretty successful now? She's 74 years old and very active.
You know, we always like to say that patients are more than their x-rays, so it sounds like she's got bone on bone there, but the most important thing would be her symptoms and how she's functioning with her activities of daily living. So if she's, you know, able to do a fair amount of activity, and her good days still outnumber her bad days, and she hasn't had to concede on a lot of her activities, trying a conservative approach is probably very worthwhile.
That the other thing is, she didn't end up with bone on bone, you know, last week. So she's been progressively deteriorating. She's probably been bone on bone for some time. So the question is, what took her to see the doctor? What changed? And if it was because she was having a lot of pain, wasn't able to manage her symptoms, then, and the bad days are winning, as Jill said, so then maybe it's time to do that. Alternatively, she could try exercises to see if strengthening around her hip buys her a bit more time. Exercising in a pool is a great place for strengthening and mobility in her hip. And even if she does that for 2 or 3 months to see if it helps with her symptoms or can help with her, get her back to her previous activities, if she decides at the end of that time that she's going to have her hip replaced, she'll be in better shape for that hip replacement than if she hadn't. So I think seeing a physical therapist for a couple visits and seeing if there is a strengthening program or a mobility program that can help with her symptoms would be in her best interest, regardless of whether or not she has the hip replacement.
And she had asked about hip outcomes, and what we know from that is outcomes are better when people do prehab or go into the surgery a little bit stronger.
Ann in Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Ann. Thank you for calling.
Oh, glad that you're taking my call. All that shoulder stuff that you were talking about, I got that.
But okay.
They finally decided they have to do surgery. The PT person actually, they didn't mean to, actually aggravated it even more. But my thing is I know that when you're doing this after the surgery, that most people have to be in like a recliner. When they did my left shoulder, that was the case. But I have a really bad lower back, and I did my adjustable bed the other night. Now my lower back is just killing me. So my question is where do I find this in between on this bed so I can't even sit down now. I have to lay down. Any ideas?
So I wasn't clear what your question was. You had shoulder surgery?
She's going to have shoulder.
I'm going to have it.
Okay, but
on my right shoulder.
Okay, but now your back is bothering you?
Yes, because I know that usually you can't sleep laying down flat after shoulder surgery. At least I couldn't when they did my left one.
Did you ask the surgeon?
Yes.
Okay, and the surgeon told you that you can't lay down flat?
Well, he said probably not.
Okay.
You know, well, right. You know, it's a thing. If it works for you, it's fine. Right now, if I sleep flat, my shoulder by the time I wake up in the morning is quite sore.
Okay.
So not an adjustable bed like a recliner, so it'll come up.
Okay. So what you may have to do is adjust your position throughout the night. It may be that you don't pick a position that it's either flat or it's up, but you may move between positions, sort of doing a balancing act between your shoulder and your back. Or you may find that there is a sweet spot of just the right amount that works for you. It's a little hard for me to say, because I can't feel your back. This is really about your comfort in your back and finding a position that doesn't hurt your back. So sometimes flexing your knees some will help relieve your back and make you more comfortable. But it's really about you finding a position that's tolerable and then perhaps moving between a couple of different positions during the night.
Right. And I would encourage you to use a various pillows of different sizes, shapes, some towels rolled up so you can kind of pad yourself or position yourself so when you do get in whatever position it is, whether it's semi-reclined or all the way reclined, that you can kind of put support under your shoulder, under the things that are needed, so there's not really any space between your body and the mattress or the bed, and that might make you more comfortable as well. So I would just, you know, have a whole pile of towels and pillows, and so when you find that spot, you're kind of well padded and supported.
Mm-hmm. Those body pillows are nice for that.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
Good
I'm
fire.
Not sure how well I'm going to be able to sleep on my side, but if that's a doable, that would work out.
Yeah. Yep, that's definitely an option.
Yep, and the body pillow allows you to not sleep fully on your side, but doing front side lying or back side lying, which are sort of halfway in between your back and your side or your front and your side.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Good
well,
luck.
I'll give that a try.
Yeah, see how you do. Good luck with that.
Anne, thank you so much for calling, Anne. Robin in Green Bay has another issue. Let's go there. Hi, Robin.
Hello. I have a comment and a question. My comment is thank you, thank you, thank you. I injured my rotator cuff probably, 5 to 7 years ago. Went to an orthopedic doctor who gave me a shot and said I would have to live with it, that I had osteoarthritis. Listen to you guys. This is really will make me cry. And went to a physical therapist, and I have, like, full range of motion now.
Wonderful.
Good for you.
I couldn't put deodorant on. That's when I finally went to the doctor because I couldn't lift my arm. And I have totally full range of motion, and
Oh, good for you. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Happy holidays to you. Yes, but now.
Yeah. My current issue is not all that current. Last February, I was carrying my 2-year-old grandson out of the swimming pool, and I lost buoyancy and kind of twisted. And I think my extra weight and his extra weight did some kind of knee injury, which, I saw my regular doctor, and she just said, gave me some exercises and said to wait, and I have been waiting, and it's almost completely better. But if I do a twisting motion, it still bothers me. I clearly won't be doing any cross-country skiing with this. It hurts on the inside of my knee, and sometimes it'll hurt on the outside of the back, too, but it's mostly like right below my knee on the inside.
Okay. So let's see, you did really well the first time, and now you waited 9 months to call us?
Well, it was getting better. I could go.
Yeah,
I
yeah do, no, that's...
I could do so many things.
Good for you.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know...
doctor is my question.
when you did this in February and you had, the extra load of your grandson and you twisted, you may have kind of irritated your medial meniscus. That's kind of my first thought.
Yep.
And it sounds like it is getting better, but there are a few little outliers. And my best guess is you go back and you see that wonderful physical therapist you saw for your shoulder. And... you get a few strengthening exercises. So your physician gave you some exercises, and that's all well and good, but those might not be appropriate for you. You may need more. You may need something different. So my best guess is 1 or 2 visits with a physical therapist would get you probably that little thing you need.
Yeah, exactly. So the things that you got initially, perfect. They worked for you, but then you plateaued and you weren't in the system to have your exercises advanced and progressed as you got better. So you have stayed at that level. So that's why it's important to go back, even if you feel like, oh yeah, I'm getting better. This happens often. Oh yeah, I'm getting better. And then they stop coming to therapy and all of a sudden it's 3 months down the road and they say, well, I was getting better, but I'm not following the same trajectory. Well, they've plateaued where they left off when they walked out of therapy. So get back in, see that PT, as Jill said, and get those things advanced.
Good luck, Robin.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Dan in Milwaukee, what's on your mind? Hi, Dan.
Hi there. I'm a big guy. I'm 250, 5'10". Although I'm not as big as I used to be, but I'm fairly active. I have a Garmin, so I have data. And my step count over the last 6 months is about 13,500 average.
Nice.
But I'm really feeling it in my hips and my legs, and I'm feeling I can't do any more. So, number one, I'm concerned about flexibility. I just seem to be bound up. And number two, I'm not getting any exercise above my waist. So, if I didn't mention it, I'm 70, so, I'm getting up there. And I wondered if there's anything easy I can do, or should I just go see a physical therapist?
Are you in your car?
I am.
Do you drive for work?
No.
Okay, good. Okay, because that was my first question. If you were sitting and driving for work, that's tough just to get out and do that.
No, I'm retired.
Oh, good for you.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I have a dog, and so the dog and I go out twice a day, morning at night, at least an hour.
Okay.
So when I'm walking, I'm not getting any cardio either because the dog is a sniffer. So it's
oh, God, yeah. Sometimes you have to say... Sometimes you have to say to the dog, this is my walk, not yours.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
I feel that she's walking me half the time.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So do you belong to a gym or anything like that?
I have a treadmill, and in the winter I go downstairs and get on the treadmill.
Okay. And that's good exercise for endurance, but there's nothing in here that really talks strengthening to me. And we know that with the aging process, it's really important that we implement a strength training program.
Right.
So we don't lose muscle mass.
Right. So you have to.
Well, that's kind of why I'm calling.
Yep. Exactly. So I guess my advice is for you to figure out what works for your lifestyle. So there are those people who need to have that gym membership, who need to get out, who need to use those machines, who need to be in that environment. There are other people who say, I hate that. I hate that scene. I can't do that. I want to do something at home. So, you know, the new year is a nice time to think about a gym because they often offer these great deals like a 30-day free trial.
Right, or a Groupon or something like that.
Yeah, or some sort of a coupon. And that's a good time to go try it and ask yourself, does this work for me? Can I do this? And if so, then if you have something that's a month-to-month or whatever, that's great to keep going. If you feel like, no, that's not my scene, then there are videos that you can that you can rent from the library.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Or that you can buy. There are things that you can download from YouTube to look at basic exercises, and you can see if any of that grabs you, like, yeah, I like this. And then figure out what's going to work for you and then implement it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If I'm concentrating on strengthening, should I forget about cardio?
No. Don't
you
forget
about it.
You do both. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
You're retired.
Yeah, I know.
You got time to do it.
Yeah. Two to 3 days per week of strength training is what the American College of Sports Medicine recommends.
At least in 3 to 5 days of exercise.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Minimum.
And thanks so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. Lori with the Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, she's in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Tim and Eau Claire next. Tim, thank you for calling.
Well, thanks. Good morning. I got a question for your guest there. I hear you referring to a physical therapist and talk to us a lot. What is your opinion about chiropractors and a chiropractic practice? You have any opinions about how they relieve back pain of various kinds, or does that depend on the condition, I suppose?
So I would say, like any other profession, there's definitely a role for chiropractics in healthcare. For example, if you do have hypomobility or stiffness in your joints, particularly your spine, having a chiropractic manipulation done to increase the mobility of your spine is certainly indicated. So I definitely think there's a place for chiropractic medicine. I work very closely with a chiropractor in my position, and we basically share patients. I'll work with the patient, and perhaps they need a manipulation that I don't feel comfortable performing. Physical therapists can perform some manipulations. For example, I don't feel comfortable performing cervical spine manipulations, and I would send them to the chiropractor for a cervical spine manipulation, and the chiropractor usually sends them back to me, and I follow up with exercise or mobility training, things like that.
Yep, agreed. Physical therapists often work closely with chiropractors as part of a team to take care of patients with, you know, back pain, neck pain, et cetera. So certainly part of the healthcare team.
Yep. Thank you so much, Tim, for calling. And let's see, Anita in Fox Lake. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Good afternoon. I've been seeing a physical therapist for about a month. I have a rotator cuff problem and an elbow problem. and the rotator cuff seems to be getting better, but the elbow is still really, really sore. It's on the inside of my elbow, kind of right on the bone there, and I was wondering if anybody might have any suggestions.
Is it, do you have what's called golfer's elbow? Did your physical therapist give your elbow pathology a name?
No, they haven't actually named anything specifically. I did go out and buy one of those tennis things, you know, that
tennis elbow strap.
Yes. And that helps. It does help. But it's just, it's really sore. Really, really sore.
Okay.
It's not, you know, yeah.
Okay. So when you're, is it more on the outside of your elbow or the inside of your elbow?
It's on the side that would face your ribs.
Okay.
And it's right in the, like where the bone is there.
Uh-huh.
It's right in there.
Okay.
And it's really sore.
Okay. All right. Are you doing anything where you're changing how you grip or rotate your wrist or move your wrist at all?
Not exactly, no.
Okay. All right.
So what are you doing to help it besides the tennis elbow strap?
When I go to physical therapy, they just started. I'm on my last appointment tomorrow, and using a weight up and down,
okay,
you know, to flex that area, and that's kind of it.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a good place to start, but this can be a difficult problem, especially in the context of an existing shoulder problem. And we often see those things happen together because as one joint hurts, you modify how you do things, and that creates a problem elsewhere, which is kind of why we tell people when they have a problem to get in earlier rather than later so that these secondary problems don't develop. So sticking with this, thinking about how you move, lifting, etc.
And especially if your shoulder is improving and your mechanics of your shoulder are normalizing, hopefully we would see that your elbow mechanics would kind of settle down as well, kind of just like you had a cause and effect. Now you have a cause and effect in a positive way. But there's probably a couple stretches or a couple other exercises that I would ask your therapist about when you see them tomorrow so you can do more things at home to manage this condition as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you should have a home program as well.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Those are tough problems.
Yes. Jim on Facebook says, Lori and Jill gave me great advice following a stress fracture, in my right foot in late August.
I remember him.
Yeah. The boot came off in late October, and he could bear weight again. End of December will be twice as long as his immobilization. He swims four times a week. He would like to know if he could cross-country ski or snowshoe this year, or should he wait a year?
I would say he could definitely cross-country ski and snowshoe this year. I don't know if he classic skis or skate skis. If you classic, you know, it's more like walking. That would be an easier thing to transition into. Skate skiing, you have a tendency to push off the inside of your foot a little bit more. So if he starts skate skiing, I would start at a much lower volume than Adafi Classics.
Yeah, and snowshoeing is great.
Yeah.
Snowshoeing would be great. So absolutely, I would not wait. They're not impact activities.
Right.
They're weight-bearing. They're a nice amount of weight-bearing. I would absolutely get on those things.
Yep. You bet.
Matt emailed to ask if you could talk about jump roping, how to start, the benefits, and anything else he should know.
That's funny that he asks that. The gentleman in my neighborhood does this. There's a loop in our neighborhood. It's a mile, and he carries his jump rope with him, and he walks for a little bit, and then he jumps rope, and when he gets tired, he walks a little bit more, and he does a couple loops. So jumping rope is a really nice cardiovascular activity that's very easy and convenient. You can do it in your garage or outside. It requires very little equipment. It requires some coordination, and it's also or a lot of coordination, and it's also impact. So it's nice, light impact on your feet. So there's a lot lot of benefits to jumping rope.
Mm-hmm. I would just move into it slowly, right, so you don't end up like the previous emailer with a stress fracture in your foot.
Right, or calf soreness.
Or calf, yeah, a lot of Achilles tendinopathy or things like that. So I would be careful about the surface that I started it on.
Yep.
So I was on a shock absorptive surface. I would have shoes that were designed more for a forefoot impact, because most running shoes are designed for a rear foot impact. So make sure I had on the right kind of shoes for it, and then work into it slowly so that all of your connective tissues, your bones, your joints, your muscles can accommodate to that loading.
So right, when you say slowly, it like jump rope for a minute or 2 minutes?
Right,
or?
And that's kind of exactly what my neighbor does, is he'll jump rope for about a minute or so, and then he'll walk. And kind of walk X amount of distance, and then he'll jump again. And he's increased how long he's jumping at each place, but that's exactly what he did.
Right. And the question is, however, is where to start, you know, right, how to start. And some of it depends upon your fitness level and your current activity level. So if Matt is a sedentary person, this is going to be a big shift. If Matt is a runner, it will not be a big shift.
Right.
So it really depends upon what he's doing right now. If he's a basketball player, if he does any kind of running or impact, then rope jumping will not be a huge change for him.
Right.
If he's sedentary or a bicyclist
or
a swimmer, then it's going to be a big shift. And then you're going to have to move in, or you have to start at a lower level. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan in Norway, Wisconsin, it is your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I did something very similar to the example you just gave. I do a walk circuit of about a mile and three quarters on my lunch hour at work, and I implemented push-ups into it, and I started out doing 20 push-ups when I started, and then I would do a few times throughout the walk, maybe at a quarter or a half mile, and I was up to doing a full 200 push-ups in that 30 minutes.
Wow.
Jeez. I'm 45. I'm about 205. I've always been in pretty good shape. I do a lot of bicycling. I grew up as a competitive swimmer, so I'm just trying to hang on to a little bit of the youth there.
And,
yeah. Yeah, hey, that's not that funny.
Oh, no.
And I started having pain on the outside of my right shoulder. I am right-handed.
No kidding.
And it doesn't feel like it's ball or socket, but if you take your left hand, reach over, and just touch the outside meaty part of your shoulder, that's
your rotator cuff, baby.
Yeah, it's a referral. It's the classic referral place for your rotator cuff.
200 push-ups in 30 minutes. Too much.
Well,
too
not
much.
All at once.
No, but it doesn't matter.
That's a lot.
That's too much. Your rotator cuff is barking at you. It doesn't like it. So
okay,
you can continue to do it, but your rotator cuff will continue to complain.
So what happens
stopped about 2.5 months ago from the push-ups, and I still do have discomfort. It wakes me up sometimes if I'm
sure
sleeping on my right side.
Yep. That's classic rotator cuff pathology. So here's the deal. The push-ups are great in moderation, just like everything else, because they work the large muscle groups, your beach muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you want to hang on to your youth, there you go.
I've always chest and back.
There you go.
Of course.
But what happens is you get a muscle imbalance, and it's like David and Goliath, and those muscles get too big, and the rotator cuff can't
keep up
with those big muscles. So you need to work both of them, and so you need to work your rotator cuff muscles as well. You would benefit from seeing a physical therapist for a few visits to make sure that you have adequate muscle balance. You just have tipped the scales is all you've done,
right,
with imbalance.
And I love that you said you stopped these 2.5 months ago and you still have pain, because that points to the fact that you and your shoulder were in homeostasis until you started hitting 200 push-ups.
Right.
And then you stop that, but your rotator cuff is still mad at you. So it's like, well, I don't want to get into...
It is like a woman.
It is, yeah, exactly. A woman scorned. So it's going to continue to hurt until you give it some attention. And that means getting on some specific rotator cuff exercises. And I will not make any more comments about that.
There we go. Good
luck,
Dan. Does
that make sense, Dan? Yeah. Physical therapy, rotator cuff exercises.
I'll take care of it. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling.
And I love his circuit idea. It would be nice to do something other than push-ups in some of those circuits.
Right,
maybe
some sit-ups.
Some
plank. Some planking is great, but you don't have that shoulder motion
which
your rotator cuff doesn't like, but you're still working it.
Exactly.
John in Madison, hello to you.
Hi. thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
So I have this pain on my left knee, kind of on the outside, outside left of it. Went in, saw a doctor, did an X-ray and a stress test, and you know I didn't feel the pain in the moment. And he wanted me to come back for an MRI if the pain came back, you know, and the pain has always been there, and it comes and goes when I run or when I, you know, when I bike. So I'm just kind of trying to figure out if I should go back for the MRI or go see a physical therapist.
I think you should go see a physical therapist. It definitely sounds activity-related, so if you can make it hurt when you run and bike, which tells me it's probably either joint or muscular, so it'd probably be worth seeing a physical therapist to see if what activity modifications you need or strengthening or if it's a shoe wear, if it's a footwear thing, something like that.
I mean, it sounds like kind of a classic iliotibial band syndrome. You have a band that runs down the outside of your thigh, and there's a little bursa on the outside of your knee. And when you bike or run, that band snaps back and forth across that knee and irritates it. So I would start with some physical therapy before I went and did an MRI. So, I mean, the purpose of doing an MRI, you know, unless you're going to have surgery, I don't know that's the right next step.
Right, and it wouldn't change your course of care with the physical therapist. The physical therapist can treat you based on the impairments they identified in the exam.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And Mike in Coon Valley, thank you for calling.
You bet. I've been dealing with some right knee pain for the past 10 weeks plus. Seen the orthopedic doctor twice, took x-rays, all negative. Diagnosed with some fluid on the knee. She tried drawing some off, couldn't get any out, gave me a cortisone shot, had absolutely no effect. Went back after deer hunting. Pain was less, but still bothering me. Went to a physical therapist, diagnosed me with a kneecap being pulled out of line because of muscle tightness.
Sure. Patellofemoral.
I've been doing
things,
a lot of stretches, but my knee still feels really tight, like it's swollen in there. And I'm wondering, with this, you know, she gave me like three different stretches that I do for both the calf and the thigh. And then I'd use a rolling pin.
Yeah.
Are there any other, I got an appointment tomorrow to go back to yours. Are there any other stretches I could talk to her about doing that might? I mean, maybe it's something the way I walk, if I can, you know, so I walk pigeon-toed to try to turn that in.
Don't do that.
I don't want duck-footed in a way to alleviate, but I mean, is there something I could talk to her about?
Well, it sounds like they're starting with some mobility or stretching exercises, which is a good strategy. The question meant is, do we need to do some strengthening, particularly about your hip?
Yeah.
And so it may be that there's the muscles are getting tight because you don't have good hip control. There's a lot of research supporting hip strengthening of some very specific muscles at the hip for people with what we call patellofemoral pain, which is what it sounds like you have.
Yeah. It could be some kneecap pain. Does it feel like the tightness is in your joint, or does it feel like it's in front of your knee? Is it tight to go all the way straight and all the way bent, or just one direction?
No, both ways.
Both ways.
All around the kneecap area.
So it's also tight when you try to straighten your knee all the way out? When you lay with it straight, it's also tight?
It's painful.
Okay, is it painful?
If I'm walking, I slipped on some ice, my leg went straight, you know, more than I usually do. I mean, it's just a shooting pain then.
And does it hurt behind your knee at all?
Not a lot. I mean, it's more the tightness I can feel there, but the most of the pain is right in the kneecap area.
Okay, well, you could have some arthritis underneath your kneecap, but, you know, this
X-rays didn't show any.
Well, it makes me wonder if what was the original injury?
That's a good question.
Okay.
Well, I had my son's wedding dance. I love to dance, and then I had a long 2-day car ride out to Minot, North Dakota, for a show. Mm-hmm. And after I got done the drive out there, I hardly pick my foot up off the floor.
So, so the x-rays may not have shown any arthritis, but you have articular cartilage under on the undersurface of your kneecap, and that does not show up on a plain radiograph. And you could have, and sitting like that would have really compressed your kneecap into your femur and irritated that articular cartilage.
Right.
So my best guess is that's what he's done, and it didn't show up on an x-ray because it's articular cartilage.
Yeah, so some strengthening exercises. The cartilage on the undersurface of your kneecap. So some strengthening exercises would be in order, you know, not things like squatting and stuff, but things with your knee straight, like a straight leg raise to the front and to the side and back would be good for strengthening around your hip.
And it may, they may want to try taping to see if that gives you some good proprioceptive feedback and kind of realigns your kneecap where it should be in your knee.
Yeah, or you could use the little plunger.
Yeah, use a little toilet plunger.
A little toilet plunger works for mobilizing your kneecap.
Yep. Yeah.
So strengthen the hip, maybe?
Strengthen the hip. Yep. Start with a little bit of strengthening, and I'm sure that's probably where your physical therapist is going next. He or she probably just thought you were so tight that flexibility was a good place to start, and it sounds like it is.
And then maybe some taping?
Yeah, maybe some taping. Yep. You can ask them if they try taping.
Have you tried a pull-on knee sleeve?
I did right away, and one of them actually hurt so bad I couldn't leave it on.
Right.
And I did one with a little less constriction to keep it warm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did it have a cutout, a hole for your kneecap?
The one I used most had three straps on it that kind of you could adjust the tightness around the kneecap.
But do they cut? But is there a hole for your kneecap, or does it compress your kneecap?
There wasn't a hole on that one.
Okay.
I think the other one I had did have a hole for the kneecap, and that one I couldn't stand to wear.
That one might have been too tight.
Might have been too tight. Yeah. So it's good to have a hole cut out for your kneecap, so you don't compress your kneecap because it's the compression that annoys it. But having the pressure around the rest of your knee might help with that feeling of tightness.
There you go. Good luck, Mike. Thank you for calling. John in Winona, Minnesota has something for us. Hi, John.
Hey, I'm going to try not to confuse you too much here, but about 10, 12 years ago, I had a meniscus injury. Just basically shredded the meniscus. Did an orthopedic surgery just to see what was going on, and it was just pieces floating around everywhere. Really wasn't any option to have surgery to repair it or nothing. And I've never had any problems since other than having to drain the fluid out of my knee for the first year or so. But the thing I'm wondering about is I'm a Green Bay Packers fan, but I'm a fan of Adrian Peterson, who tore his meniscus at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And had surgery to repair it.
Yeah.
And also went through physical therapy and just came back now.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, is there lasting effects of not having that repaired or,
Why do some people have surgery and some don't?
So it's location, location, location. So part of your meniscus can actually kind of heal on its own. Part of your meniscus has a blood supply, and that part can heal on its own. Other parts can't heal so much, and they actually have to be removed. What we've learned is that we want to keep or salvage our meniscus as much as possible. So if the tear is in the area where there's vascularity, they'll go ahead and repair it so you can keep your meniscus. So long term, you have that meniscus, and that's what they did with Adrian, versus a meniscectomy where they take the chunk out. And the recovery is much, much shorter, but then long-term, you lose your meniscus. So a lot of it has to do with the location of the tear, the type of tear. They classify tears numerous ways, longitudinal, horizontal, zigzag, blah, blah, blah. And then ultimately what the demands on the knee are. So some people have a meniscal repair. Some people have a meniscectomy. Some people's can heal on their own, and they don't need any surgery.
Right. So it's very individualized, which is why people say, well, my neighbor had this or my friend had this, and I should do it too. And they really are very individual decisions, and that should be made between the patient and their doctor.
There we go. And, John, great question to end the show. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And, Lori and Jill, you'll be back on January 16th on Martin Luther King Day, and we'll do this all over again.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Have a great, safe rest of the year for everyone.
Yeah.
Lori Tynebrody, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program and at the UW. And, of course, they'll be back next month, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow, Paul Novak talks with us about holiday bread baking, and he always brings some bread, which I'm looking forward to. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.